Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to Raise the Vibe. I'm your host, Liz Peterson. Thank you for joining me today. Joining me via phone is Eva Papp. Eva, 20 years as a psychotherapist helping clients achieve goals, has taught her what's needed, what works, and how to tailor it so it works for you. And she has a new school called Via De Nova, which we'll be discussing today. Eva, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Liz. Thanks for having me.
So great to have you join me today. Awesome. So let's start right off about learn who you are. So why don't you start by sharing a little bit about your journey to now with us and what shaped where you are today?
Well, you know, that could be a really long conversation, but I'm going to kind of pivot off what you said. I've been a psychotherapist for 20 years. I closed my practice about 3 years ago. And since then, I've been thinking about how do I bring forward what I've learned in those 20 years of working with all kinds of different individuals into something that I could share widely that could be maximally beneficial. And so from that thinking, I've created a curriculum that I'm putting forward in my new school, the School of De Nova. So that's where I am, and that's kind of what brought me here.
That's great. So on your website, evapapp.com, you mentioned a lifelong curiosity with human nature across cultures. Can you explain?
Well, this goes way back. I'm first generation in this country. I'm a child of immigrants. And my contextualizing has always been in a sort of a global frame because I never fully related to being, you know, just American. And I think that starts it. And of course, I've always had this very strong spiritual bent. And I was brought up in a pretty typical church, but soon kind of outgrew that container and started to look for larger representations of my spiritual self. And that led me to study many different traditions and traditions from various cultures, you know, through book learning, through in-person contact. I mean, I was out in Siberia doing field work during my graduate studies, and
awesome.
Was more recently in Peru doing some work with a plant medicine healer there. So, I mean, that's just been kind of how I roll.
Great. So how do those wisdoms influence the work that you do today?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Liz, but when I went off to Siberia, it was in 97, and I went in the dead of winter of all things, I went to study what I was calling contextual psychology, meaning psychology in context. You can't really separate the two. Mm-hmm. And I was really looking at how sort of Western psychology has been informed by a long history of Western thinking and how other people think about mental health and mental illness given different types of cultures. So I was out there trying to understand from that perspective really how to think about healing as I was, you know, embarking on my career as a psychotherapist. So it felt really important to me to have this other frame. So from back then, and it's just continued, and what I learned and brought into my practice was a not only sensitivity to cultural difference. And I was actually had a specialization in multicultural therapy, but also integrative medicine because there are other ways of thinking about health, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just mental health. Mental health is very much related to the body and, you know, in some shamanic cultures, also to your relationship to the ancestors. I mean, it can get really big.
Yeah.
So all of that I brought in with me, and it informed how I sat with clients.
That's wonderful. So how do some of those, you know, that integrative medicine, mm-hmm. you know, transfer in some of the healing work you do with your clients?
Are you talking about now with the teaching I'm proposing to do?
Sure. Any of it.
Yeah. So, well, there's certain kind of wisdoms and understandings of people in a physical context and a spiritual context, which I think we pay lip service to a little bit in Western psychology, but, you know, these cultures, it's just the truth. So there's multiple ways of approaching mental health. And my practice was very heavy in acknowledging and working with lifestyle, for instance. You know, what's your diet? Are you sleeping? You know, what else is going on in your life? Mm-hmm. And I was always very open to people's spiritual practices, however they experience them, and incorporate them right into the work together. Also, when I started my practice, and I think all new clinicians should really go this route, in the beginning at least, I did a lot of work with really young children in non-directive play therapy. Hmm. And so what that does, it forces you into a posture of working with symbol and physical and energy. And so you really get good at the energetic transference, counter-transference work that's necessary in deep clinical work, but is really, that's how you roll with young children. And so, of course, a lot of the shamanic cultures and other cultures I've worked with, you know, they do work, and spirituality works often also on an energetic level.
Yeah.
So that early work with children really intensified and focused that energetic work in the context of therapy. So so I did a lot of energy work also, not always out, you know, not forward, mm-hmm. you know, within myself. That allowed me to be a lot more proficient and focused and precise in my work.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a great extra layer to have for your work.
Yeah.
Being an energy healer, I'm like, hey. That's
great.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say energy healer because I didn't go out there try to heal people's energy, but I work with the energy. I think it gave mm-hmm. me a much more subtle and layered approach to the transference, counter-transference work of psychotherapy because I had all these other avenues to work with energy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay, so De Nova. So tell us all about De Nova.
Well, you know, it's interesting. and it's funny because my wife will say, don't ever name anything. You're such a terrible namer. And she's right. But I decided that I wanted to name this school, and it didn't actually even start with a school, because when I started to think about how to communicate this thing that I was offering, and it was really a path to for women to begin to get in touch with their personal authority and power, their authenticity, and those kind of words can really clunk when you put them out there in the world. And I thought, you know what? People are really not even going to know what I'm talking about. Mm. Like when a lot of women struggle with this issue, say, hey, your personal authority. They're like, what are you talking about? And so I thought, oh God, I need a visual. I need a visual to represent this concept. And I started thinking about it, and how do we use concepts to hold visual, to hold concepts. Mm-hmm. And you know, you go back and it's really through the work of archetypes. You know, there's an archetype of, you know, the mother, for instance. And that holds a lot of information. And I thought, you know, what we need is an archetype to express what I'm trying to achieve with women. And I did a lot of research on archetypes. And there really wasn't one that captured. I mean, if there is one, it would be the great goddess. But, you know, that's so archaic, right? And I thought, oh, God, we need a modern day great goddess. And I thought, I'm going to create an archetype of this self-referencing woman, right? That is sovereign, majestic, sacred, that, you know, does her thing in the world and acts through her brilliance onto the world in such a way that not only is she lifted up, but she lifts up everyone around her. This is the person I want to put out there, right?
Beautiful.
So I created this archetype, and I actually got with an illustrator, a friend of mine who's just a brilliant illustrator, and I was like, look, I've got this concept. It's got to come out of my head into an image. And so we developed the De Nova woman, and you could actually go to my website, and she's illustrated there. And she's going to be a significant sort of helper as I weave through, as I weave her and them, there's three of them, through the course. But it really is this other way of tapping into what I believe every woman possesses, which is this knowledge of themselves as self-referencing, powerful in their own right. And so that's where the concept of the De Nova came from. And I love the name De Nova because it's sort of open-ended and people can project what they want onto there. And so basically what you see there is really gives you a reflection of where you're coming from, right? But for me, it means God in our brilliance. D-A-E is like a feminine God to me. And, you know, a nova is this brilliant, you know, this flaring brilliant star, you know, and it's all in its glories. So, you know, people will see other things in it, a new day. We'll see what they see in it. But for me, that is what it is.
That's beautiful. Okay, so let's dive into what is personal authority.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because in my newsletter, I do these interviews with women who I feel like are living the De Nova. And the very first interview I did with this woman, and I said, well, you know, how do you express your personal authority? And she goes, personal authority? What's personal authority? And I laughed, and I was really taken aback. And I think that this is not so unusual that women are a little bit at a loss to kind of understand and put out what is it, this personal, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. But for me, what personal authority means is that you are the reference point. That when you look out onto your world, you see it through a frame of who you are and what is it that you need and want, what brings you joy, what makes you come alive, what is your ease, what is your purpose, what is your brilliance, right? What is you? And then everything gets channeled through that frame. Now, the challenge, and it's one of the things that I work with in my course, is that women, through kind of a neglect, it's been kind of a cultural neglect, have lost the ability, or it's so muted or faint or even distorted, the ability to tap into and to hear without distortion that inner voice that is their self-referencing voice. And a lot of the work that I do in my course, certainly the first half of it, is all about reclaiming and waking up and learning to exercise the mechanisms that allow us to even hear, right? So I think, you know, what's a personal authority? It's someone who can live life through their joy, their purpose, their meaning.
That's great.
And be self-actualizing, yeah.
Right. So a lot of women, I know myself, you know, like, yeah, 3 to 5 years ago and asked that question, didn't know. So let's talk about that self-reflection and self-referring, as you call it, and using that as a reference point or a beginning.
Well, okay. So, you know, going all the way back, and I already just alluded to this, but it comes from first being able to hear yourself, right? So that is part of the first thing that we establish. What is the mechanisms to hear yourself? And are they working? And to what degree are they working? And how do you get them working well again? Because without that piece, you can't do the follow-on piece. It's so funny to me. Like, I'll go through, you know, my life like we all do, and there'll be all these, like, prescriptions. Women, you know, listen to your inner voice, or women, you know, just, you know, act, you know, from what's best for you. But there's been a fundamental breakdown that precedes all of that, which is that we don't know how to anymore, right? So this is part of why this work is so important, because unless you can rehook up the channels and learn to hear them again, you can't do that next piece of work, which, by the way, the world is desperate for, you know.
Right. So how has society played a role, or even our family structures, in a, you know, that loss of our personal power?
Well, you know, I think it's hard to talk about that question without looking at the larger cultural container, mm-hmm. right? Which is really patriarchal. And there is a privileging of the male. It's just an epical thing. It's where it's at. And whenever we privilege one thing, we disappear another thing, right? Mm-hmm. Or we minimize it or subjugate it or whatever word you want to use. So because we exist in that kind of a cultural holding, even if you have different kinds of family structures that might even be very supportive, you're still working with this larger system that even if you step out and you've been given a lot of the tools of self-referencing and self-actualizing, the culture doesn't support you, right? You get out there and then you try to, like, express yourself and you don't get the support. So it's multi-layered. It's the family systems, but they're cultural systems. There's a lot of things at play here.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Educational systems and
workplace. Yeah. Culture.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And so the thing is, you know, one of the things I talk about is that you can't go out there expecting that there's going to be equality. There's not. So then knowing how to act in this context where what you bring forward isn't always going to be welcome is critical. Like, that's one of the tools you got to know, right? So it's multi-layered.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gosh, so where would be a good starting point, you know, for women to embrace their personal empowerment?
You know, I think the best place to start is wherever you are, right? For some people, they're in one place and they need a certain kind of a movement forward, both because of how they learn and also where they're at. And you would work with that person very differently than you would with someone else who learns a different way is at a different starting point. So it's hard to do a prescription for, like, everybody. But I always advocate starting at the easiest place where you can realize success the quickest. And then building from there, because, of course, success builds success. So, you know, if you're kind of a person who gets a lot of joy from movement, then it's about checking in to see, you know, as you move through your day and the things that you are doing, are you checking in to make sure they're not just satisfying the demands of the day, but are they also speaking to your pleasure?
Mm.
Are you taking the time to do the things that are going to make your life right now that much better? It's really simple. And as you begin to learn to privilege, because then you have to ask the question, right? Well, where am I right now? And what is it that I need? And right there, in asking yourself the question, you're asking the channels to respond, and you start listening. And just that tuning in starts to activate the channels that'll give you the information, right? Now, if things have been in disuse for a long time, things are going to get rusty. You're going to get kind of half information or funky information. But as we start acting on the information that we get, it starts to change. Things start to become clear. The more you listen, the more you hear. And as you begin to, like, say, you know, work with movement and your pleasure, you get to discover more of what brings you pleasure and what feels better. And so as you begin to go down that path, it gets more precise. It goes from something that's very chaotic to maybe something that's a little bit clearer of a message, right? So that's a general pathway. And then, of course, as you learn what that's like to start increasing your pleasure and ease in that channel, then it's much easier to extend it to other channels, say a mental channel or an emotional channel that might be a little bit more challenging to you. So you know, definitely the path that I teach is an incremental path because, you know, and this is something, of course, that I've seen in my therapy practice, that there's a zone of optimal effort and a zone of optimal achievement. And if you step outside of that, an optimal stretch, then you actually go backwards. So you always want to be in that place where you're succeeding, feeling rewarded, learning, you know, and so it is a slower pace.
Wow, that's awesome. That's fascinating. Yes. I love the description of that. But it brings me to, you know, as you're questioning yourself and self-going through self-discovery, what's screaming in my head right now is trust. So because when you're not used to this practice, you're not used to trusting yourself. So let's talk a little bit about how we learn to trust ourselves, you know, during the questioning process.
Well, I think you bring up a really, really good point. And I actually think that's why these types of journeys are best done in the company of others. Mm-hmm. And even if it's like your best friend who knows you, right? Or, you know, an online support group where people don't know you but can hold you accountable and say, hey, you know, Liz, that sounds a little bit like self-flagellation, right? Mm-hmm. It can help. It can help with that. I mean, it is very difficult because then you're in a little silo of your own. It's very hard to actually step outside of the only thing that you know because you can't even recognize what's sitting outside,
right?
That's why incremental is so important, but also why you don't undertake these things alone, I think, is so important because we need that reflection of something different to show us that there's an other way. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And yeah. I think the group process really works well. So what I'm hearing is that, you know, while you're doing this class, it's actually a group process. So you can get the reflections and perspectives of other people while they're in the class.
Yeah. Well, you know, I bill it. It's a 3-month course. So I bill it not just as a learning thing, but actually as an incubator. So as you learn the skills, you practice the skills, and then there are weekly like homework labs, because I give a lot of stuff to do. Because, you know, one thing is if it's in the brain, but then actually do it and experience it, it starts to go into the body, right? And then that is where it really can create different, and there, that's where it can create real change.
So
part of these homework groups is then to get together on a weekly basis and talk about what people are experiencing in the homework, get support so that people are not going through this alone. And part of it is, you know, there's this daily forum where I'm on there daily during the course, checking in with people with questions. And, you know, there are different multiple ways of connecting with others so that, you know, the journey is undertaken not by yourself. Because that, when you're trying to create change, you need that external reflection and support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. So I'm going to pull a question off your website. How do we live the life suited to who we are and what we want?
Big question.
It's not, except that you can really understand it only when you really work through the first part of the course. Because once you understand the mechanisms of really how to listen to yourself, then what happens is you hear what you need. And then it's a matter of putting it into practice. And, you know, part of what we do in the first 6 weeks, we talk about right action. And it's like once you have the data, then how do you translate that into an action that's going to continue to feed who you are, strengthen your connection with yourself, and enhance what I call the follow-on attributes, which are the ease, the joy, the purpose, the impact. It's a certain way of taking action. So once you know how to do all of that, then hearing what you need and want and acting on it is not that difficult. But you got to have all the elements in place.
Right.
So while the question seems difficult, once you have the pieces in place, it's not. You know, I write this little section when I'm talking about the course that to live with personal authority is easy. It's natural because power and power for women, power for anybody is a natural state. But we have lost the knowledge and the tools to do that. And so then it's like, oh my God, how do I do this thing? How do I listen to myself? How do I create a life? But if you have the tools, then it's just, you just do it because you know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just time. And as you change and grow and become a different person, you know, the vista just keeps changing. The end of my course is all about fluid dreaming, and it's how to put your dreams out into the world in this really fluid way. So it's constantly responding to who you are becoming, the newer you, the better you, the higher goal, the bigger vision, you know? So it's a great question. It requires some pieces that are still missing.
The fluid dreaming reminds me of following my intuition, how I go day by day, listening, you know, what am I getting? What am I receiving? And then functioning accordingly. Can you give an example maybe to kind of demonstrate what that right action is? You know, that process?
Are you talking about right action or fluid dreaming? Because there are two different things. Do you mean the right action piece?
That's really the doing part. So let's start with the fluid dreaming part and then go into the doing part.
Well, just a really simple explanation of fluid dreaming. It's about setting your sights on something, right? And now you've done all this work, because fluid dreaming is week 11 and 12. We wrap up the course with fluid dreaming. So you've already learned to craft right action, and you've already learned to work with what I call a yes to you, which is actually that piece that I taught at Vashon Center for the Arts last fall, the yes to you. So you've gone through all of this. You know what a yes to you is. You know all the different yous and how to privilege different ones. You know, you've done all of that. So then you bring all that part forward to say, okay, what's my dream right now? And instead of like rigidly fixing on the horizon, you float it out there and you work toward it, but with this attitude of reception. And you actually mentioned that. So a lot of what you're doing is part of fluid dreaming, as, you know, I've described it. But then you listen and you put your toe in and you check and you go out and you come back and you move in a direction as opposed to a point on a line. And so that you allow, as better things appear or some synchronous thing happens that might take you in a slightly different direction or even a completely different direction, that there's this fluidity that your dream can then come into balance with this new thing, and still you can keep moving forward. So it's not like, go here, it stops, then stop, go here, now that stops, go here. It's more fluid. Mm-hmm. And part of that fluidity is because the piece of the dream is always a reflection of you. And so that is the constant that's always changing, right?
Right.
So it's learning how to be in that state and fluidly course correct will keep you at the optimum place at all times. And that's what you want, right?
Yeah,
because
that's
none of us are God. What's that?
Screaming self-empowerment.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And blowing up the horizon, right? Because what I can conceive now, once I've gone, you know, 10 paces down the road and I've grown and developed, I can conceive so much more. The horizon keeps shifting. So it's about always being poised to take advantage of the greatest expression of one's dreams, right? And that's
right.
Part of it, yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. So I'm going to wheel back, since that's the end of the program, I'm going to wheel it back to that woman that, you know, steps into your program who has just surrendered herself to others all the time.
Uh-huh.
So working with that woman, you know, when, why do women surrender? You know, I'm sure it's culturally, but, you know, and then how do you move that woman to a place of personal authority and self-empowerment?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Well, you know, one of the things that I was seeking to learn by doing those 6 in-person classes at Vashon Center for the Arts was to really understand how the material landed with real-time women Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done all this work in therapy, but it's very different when it's a different context. It's a teaching context. And what I realized right away that there are pretty much two levels or two cohorts of people that engage with the material. And there's some people who will come in to the course and not have much grounding in many of the tools and the skills and the concepts mm-hmm. that I teach, right? And so, and then there'll be some women who come in that are successful, that have it nailed down, and that, but they're missing critical pieces, even if one critical piece, because all the things they teach are foundational. So if you're missing one critical foundational piece, it's going to ruin everything as it moves up the line, right? So, and that type of woman is going to engage with material differently. And my expectations for that person would be different than a person who is just learning and integrating the material. So you kind of described to me a person that at least in this part of it, and she may have some real strengths and some of the tools to build, you know, her personal authority, but really weak in others. So, mm-hmm. you know, going through all the elements, we'll discover where she's weak, and there she'll have to dial it back and slowly begin to work from where she is. So, you know, the idea is when you leave the course 3 months later, some people will come out and they'll be like ready to like rock and roll, right? And some people will understand what they need to rock and roll, right? Mm-hmm. But they will be steadily moving forward. So the thing is, it's all a win. How, wherever you start in, the goal is to understand what you need to do and to move further along in the process. But everybody gets to go at their own pace. And given where they start, the goal is really to understanding and to really catapult forward. So does that answer your question?
I think so. Yeah, that's yeah. great.
And so, everybody has a different thing. So
right.
I don't know what the person's key issue is, but it would surface, and then we could work on it, whatever it is.
Right. And a lot of yeah. times, you know, this sounds a lot like giving women their voices back. You know, not only their, like, place in their life, you know, where mm-hmm. maybe there wasn't room for them before, but really a voice. So let's mm-hmm. talk about, you know, women's voices in society and kind of giving women's voices back and how yeah. you would help them do that.
Yeah, Liz, if I could just reframe that. It's not about giving women their voices back. Women have their voices. It's about learning to hear them again. And then learning to stand behind them again. So nice. That's a very kind of different piece of it. Like, I firmly believe, and which is why the archetype is the De Nova, that every woman has within her power voice, her power self, and that because of the culture that we live in and centuries of conditioning, has lost the ability to hear and to work with who she is fundamentally, which is a powerful individual. And so it's about bringing in the tools to help her reclaim what she is and has already.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then how do we discover our power and then keep it? You know, you're mm-hmm. working with women to discover, you know, are there tools, you know, for, you know, keeping that going, because I know a lot of times people can take these workshops and stuff and it's a weekend and you hold on to it for a little while and then it kind of dribbles out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think when the course is over, I'm going to have put together a Facebook group for graduates that, you know, women can be part of and can continue working on the skills. And it'd be like a group that I drop into a couple of times a week. Mm-hmm. But I'm really hoping, because I think, as I said, there are like likely two levels of individual that go through the course. And I'm really, because one of the pieces is that those who have greater gifts, you know, I'm hoping that they are willing to use those gifts to support other women. And so I'm really seeing it as a community where women can then come to continue developing and exploring and strengthening the skills that they've learned. The thing is, and this again is a little bit of a reframe of what you said, but I don't think people lose the skills. I think that there's so much opposition to expressing our power that women get tired and they collapse into old patterns.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think it's so critical, you know, not only with the School of De Nova, but also to find other institutions and groups. And right now they're exploding. They're freaking everywhere where women can continue to experience their voice and having their voice respected and acknowledged and celebrated and advanced. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it?
It is.
I see these young women on Instagram strutting their stuff, and it's, you know, it almost brings me to tears. It really makes me happy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see a lot of, like, healthy self-esteem and confidence out there these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's actually talk a little bit about that. Self-esteem and personal confidence and how that plays a role.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be good.
Well, you know, my sense is that when you regard yourself, when you honor yourself, and if you don't even have any of those things, if you start to take actions that honor who you are, you will start to feel what it feels like to respect yourself. You don't need others to respect you to feel that you have respect. You have to respect you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a way where starting that process of acting in one's own best interest starts to create an experience of value. And once one has a taste of it, it's desirable. And it itself is a motivator to keep moving forward in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a psychotherapist, you know, and people would come to me, and we often did a lot of very deep work. You know, you have to go deep to get some serious transformation. But we didn't just work from the inside out. You know, that's great, but it's really exciting if you combine that with working from the outside in, meaning you start living your life as if you are powerful, as if outside of the constraints that you've lived with before. And that itself is healing. It doesn't just have to go inside out. It's outside in will also change things over time because experience changes the brain.
Right.
So the thing is, you know, this is a course that I'm teaching. We don't have the luxury of doing the deep inside out work, although I show the way forward and then people can seek that out other places. But mm-hmm. we do the outside in work, which over time does create real change. So to me, that's really exciting because what it says is as long as you continue on the path, things are going to change.
God, that's great. And that's beautiful manifesting.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to picture how you want your life to look and then begin living it as if it already exists to create the life that you want.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So we're doing this work with you and we're, you know, going through the different steps. How does that start to affect our lives and relationships?
Well, you know, it's really interesting to me, Liz, but because the stuff I'm teaching is sort of the bedrock fundamentals of living with power and personal authority, when one makes a change at the base level, it tends to filter up and have a radical effect going up. Because if you align something that's been misaligned, it just changes the trajectory all the way up. And what I found in working with my clients, because all of what I teach comes from this 20 years of psychotherapy and my lifelong interest of studying with different cultures and wisdom traditions, what I found, my clients would come back to me and say, you know, I worked on this boundary thing here, but I'm noticing over there stuff is changing. And this is actually one of the accelerating qualities of working foundationally, that when you change something that's fundamental to the system, it shifts the whole system. And while you may have been focusing on, like, I want a better job, all of a sudden you realize your relationships are improving, or you're finding more happiness in your life because the skills are transferable. So once you learn to have a boundary, you know, you're not going to just say, well, this is acceptable, not acceptable in my work. All of a sudden you see those opportunities to express what you need and want everywhere, and mm-hmm. things start to change across the board. And that's what's so powerful.
That's great. Can we dip into boundaries a little bit more? Because I think that plays a huge role in our lives, you mm-hmm. know, especially when you're, you know, trying to step into your voice and mm-hmm. stand behind
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. I'm just now, you know, I've written a curriculum and I'm on my fourth rewrite, and I'm working just now on the module, which is 3 weeks, where we delve into boundaries. And
awesome.
It's called two no's and a yes. For these 3 weeks. And I think the way we envision boundaries is critical. And historically, we've thought about boundaries as saying, hey, no, you can't cross this line, right? Mm-hmm. And we're just now feeling like, hey, maybe we're entitled to say no. So we cover some important no's, but then I surface this thing, well, guess what? Not only are we entitled to say no, we're entitled to say yes, and yes itself is a boundary. And I tell this story of when prior to being a therapist, I did a lot of social work and different types of things. And I did a lot of investigating of child abuse in New York City when I was very, very early career. And I was out in the field one night and investigating some, you know, family didn't have food. And so we were out there seeing what the situation was. And there was this very elderly grandmother. And, of course, the family didn't have food because it was a complete drug-dependent family. It was a very difficult situation. Anyway, so there was this elderly grandmother in the room, and we almost left before checking in with her. But we went back and checked in to see how she was doing, and curled up in her arms was this infant, you know, months old. Mm. That was a failure to thrive infant, just shriveled and for lack of, you know, nourishment and care. I mean, it was on death's door, right?
Yeah.
And of course, we just whisked that thing right to the emergency room and it barely survived,
yeah.
right? The child barely survived. And in my work, and it really made an impression on me, one, because we almost missed that child and that child wouldn't survive, maybe wouldn't have lasted a day or two more,
mm-hmm.
But also the state of that infant. And, you know, the grandmother was holding it, but it's receiving no care.
Wow.
And so later on in my, and I tell this story in my coursework that later on in my clinical work, when I was working with somebody, I think it was a domestic violence client, and we were talking about boundaries, and I love doing boundary work, by the way, and it struck me that we will die if someone harms us. We can face death. But we can face death from not getting what we need. We will die just as well from not getting what we need as we will die from getting what would harm us.
Yes.
And this light bulb went off, and it had to do with that failure to thrive infant.
Wow.
And so I had been always very excited about teaching the yes side of boundaries because it's in that quadrant where our dreams live and where we thrive and come to know our most vibrant self. So when I do the boundary section, it's two no's and a yes. And I love teaching boundaries because I think there's so much life and joy that lives in the ability to say no to what would harm us and yes to what makes us come alive.
Gosh, and that is so beautiful because so often we don't say yes,
right.
you know, to our needs. We kind of, as
yes.
women, set ourselves up
yes.
on the shelf and support everyone
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's incredible.
Yep.
Bravo.
Yep.
And on your website, wow, I know, I have to take a breath after that one. That's amazing.
I know, okay. I always feel sad when I think about that infant, but the child did get to the hospital and the child did survive. So
that's wonderful.
You know, yeah, it's
that's
a
great.
Good ending.
Great. And also on your website, you talk about the shift into personal authority. Mm-hmm. Could you explain mm-hmm. what that looks like and mm-hmm. what we can expect when we join your class?
Well, you know, the thing is, what I teach, what I share is the mechanisms and the fundamental skills and the concepts that are behind living one's personal authority. And once one gets it, then one shifts, has the opportunity to shift into it. So it's the shift comes from exercising the skills and the concepts. And there you are. So just let's play with this for a minute. So imagine a time in your life, Liz, where you were feeling really capable and you were loving on yourself and you were feeling really entitled. And centering that experience, right, mm-hmm. and thinking how you lived and the choices that you made when you were in that state, right?
Right.
They're self-affirming because you're all on yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about creating that space. And we do that by living actions rightly. So this takes me to another point, which is that the course that I teach is all about how to craft right action. And what I mean by right action is actions that affirm who you are, that reflect who you are, that increase the FOAs, you know, the follow-on attributes of the ease, the joy, the success, the impact, the meaning, the purpose, the vitality, and then expressing that in the world, right? That is right action. It's all those things. And once you learn how to take right action, all of those things start to accrue. And as they do, the shift happens, right? But it's knowing how to take those steps. It's knowing what is required. It is burnishing. It's getting up to speed. The skill set, you know, that's been maybe dormant and now rusty, and maybe it doesn't even work right or sends you off the wrong path. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's getting all of that true, getting it aligned, getting it working. And then naturally it just starts to happen.
That's great.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a little bit of a process, but I think that once one understands what the process is and has integrated the process, then it shouldn't be so effortful. And in fact, I teach the skills in the first half of the class. And then as I begin to teach these other skills, we're constantly working on and refining and practicing the earlier skills so that we're developing some competence with them. So really, by the time everybody leaves the course, they should be well on their way, if not there already. Because I do use the second 6 weeks to continually stress the continued practice and use of those skills. So I think it's a pretty natural shift that happens.
Well, it sounds like a great course.
We'll see. You know, I'm still writing it. I've written it, but I'm still assembling it. And I'm so excited for January I could pop.
Oh,
you know,
I mean,
my love is it's not sitting here in front of a freaking computer and writing hours a day. That's not my joy. My joy is being with people and learning together. And to be honest with you, you know, I chose to be a psychotherapist because I thought to myself, and I came to my career later in life because I enjoy so many things. And I was like, should I do this? Should I do that? I can do this. I can do that. And what I realized is the thing that I did all the time was read about human nature, development, change, like in my spare time, all the time. And I thought, wow, if I crafted a career around this thing that I love to do anyway,
mm-hmm.
how fun for me, right? So, you know, my work, these 20 years as a psychotherapist, has been a total joy. I mean, I adore the people I've worked with. I have been moved by their work. And so for me, that is where I get my juice. I'm excited to write this. I'm excited to put it together. I'm thrilled to bring it forward. But the thing that I'm really looking forward to is throwing down and getting dirty and, like, doing the work. Because that's where transformation happens, and that's where my joy lies.
Yes, this sounds wonderful. And thank you so much for doing the work. This sounds amazing. And I know that a lot of people are really going to benefit from this program. Thank you for putting it together.
Thanks, Liz.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great. Can you share with the audience, you know, maybe some details? And I heard you say January is the start date. So let's talk about that. And then also your newsletter.
Well, the first cohort is slated for January 2021. And this information already up on my website, which is just evapap.com, my name. And you can sign on to my newsletter from the website. And I put out something every month. In fact, just this morning, I sent out my latest newsletter. And what I'm doing now is I'm doing a lot of interviews with women who are living it out in the world, and exploring some of these questions about personal authority and understanding themselves and, you know, all of it, and making mistakes and how do you leverage mistake making to move yourself forward and just all these different pieces of it. And then I cobble that into a newsletter, and sometimes I get wordy and I have to like say a piece like this one that went out today. I had this amazing interview with a director and chief of services at a women's clinic at a major teaching hospital, and we got down the sidetrack of equality, because, of course, that's what's top of mind for everybody these days. And it really prompted me to write a piece in response to the interview that we had. So that kind of thing went out today. So the newsletter is kind of loosely based on these interviews. And, in fact, I'll be interviewing Allison Reed over at Vashon Center for the Arts for our next interview that'll be out next month. But, you know, so you can experience the newsletter. What I say to people is you sign up to the newsletter, you get a sense of how I talk, what I think about, and then you can get an early sense of, hey, you know, is this person speaking to me, and would I benefit from spending time with her for 3 months? Would I survive it? You know, so
yeah, that's a great way to get to know you.
Exactly. Yeah, cool. Exactly.
And then a little bit of details about your course that starts in January.
It's online. It's 3 months. So every week a new chapter gets released. There are 12 chapters. The first half of the course, the first 6 weeks, is the mechanism of right action. And so we go into detail about all the elements, and we practice them, and we, you know, work them out, and you discover where you are and what you need to do. And, you know, so it's all of that. And then we go into a section on boundaries, which is the next 3 weeks. And then I skip back and do a piece on internal boundaries, which is a very complex arena. And then the final 2 weeks is fluid dreaming. And when I was putting this together, I was like, I want to do a full arc, so anybody who walks out of the class is going to have all the information they need to live it big in the world safely, powerfully, and joyfully. And so that's what motivated this arc of teaching. So it'll be 3 months, and there'll be two cohorts. You know, people can put themselves in two different tiers. By the third week, I ask people to pick a group. And that way, when we meet together online for in-person and homework study groups, that you are matched with people who have the same types of questions and are looking to do the same type of work that you are. So one group is more learning and integration, and the other group is like, can I discover what I'm missing? Let me understand the full arc. But now my charge is going to be, how do I integrate this into my life and put it out in the world and push myself beyond what I'm doing now? So the material is the same, but after that, the third week, it starts differentiating a little bit, because then as we do our, you know, our study groups, you know, the questions will be different. The directions people go will be different, and that's natural. And of course, anybody could participate in any group they want, but I do ask people to choose a home group so that they start having a place where they start to know other people in the group, and also can really go at their own pace and be fed at the level that they are at and is meaningful to them. So 3 months, so then we'll be done. And, you know, I had this, there's a local island t-shirt maker, Ellen. She, what's the name of her? She makes those fantastic local Vashon.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. I cannot remember right now.
Cowbell.
Yeah, Cowbell, that's it.
Blog for Cowbell, Vashon Island. And she and I are in conversation about making some Bay Nova t-shirts with the iconic 3 women on them.
Oh,
and,
great.
Yeah, so maybe my first cohort, will get, complimentary t-shirt. So there's all kinds of fun things that'll be part of it, too. It's like we're going to work. So the thing that I wanted to say about the course, I once had a Latin teacher in high school, and whenever he would give us these grueling 3-hour, midterms and finals, and he used to chew on a pipe, unlit, and he walked through the aisles going, "Now, don't you wish you had studied? S-T-U-D." He would, like, torment us, right? And the thing is, like, this is a course. It's not fluffery. It's really work. But you're going to learn real things. So that's the thing about this course. If you really want transformation, if you really want to come out having this, like, solid body of real information and have progressed to realizing that information, this would be the course for you. If it's like you're a little iffy or whatever, just stay part of the newsletter and wait, because, there's a lot that's asked, but what you get is, many times more. So that's it. You have to be, it's really for people who want to throw down, because I like to throw down. So I'd like to have people who throw down with me.
That's great,
Eva. Yeah.
And one more question. We have just a couple minutes left. So your Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram handle is EvaPapX. And we were having a fun conversation before the show. Can you explain what that X stands for? Your name?
I'll do my best.
Awesome.
Yes. X is really the unknown quantity. And the truth is, in life, things are uncertain and unknown. But when we have ourselves as an anchor, and we know how to take right action to the move through the world with authority and mindful of our ease and our pleasure and our joy and our impact and our meaning, we set ourselves up, we position ourselves to manage that uncertainty in the best way possible. So it really is about, hey, X, there's an unknown, even to this journey, all of it, and that there's a way to move through that safely and with well-being. And so that's what it's about. It's acknowledging that not everything is fixed. There is an unknown, but there's a joyful way and a successful way and a safe way to move through that.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. Eva Papp, everybody. And Eva, why don't you go ahead and give everybody your email address and how they can reach you on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Okay, so my email is easy. It's contact@evapapp.com. And again, my website is just evapapp.com, and you can find everything there. And all of the social media handles are now the same, which is just EvaPappX. And I would love to hear from any and all of you on any of those platforms.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eva. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. What a great conversation.
Yeah, Liz, thank you too.
Thanks. And thank you, everyone, for joining me today. This is Liz Peterson on Raise the Vibe on Voice of Vashon's 101.9 FM KVSH. Have a great day, everybody. And remember to get out there and raise the vibe.